The internet is a vast and seemingly never-ending space. A valuable tool for anyone who dares to use it. With great power comes great responsibility. Though, and time again, we see history repeat itself in the worst of ways. Among the many corners of the internet, communities have risen and made their home. YouTube is perhaps the most significant pillar of all of these communities. A place where nearly everyone has the opportunity to create and share online content with millions across the globe. With hundreds of thousands of hours of content uploaded nearly every minute, there is virtually no one around who doesn't spend at least some time on YouTube. The eclectic group of entertainers who make YouTube content is affectionately known as YouTubers. Generally, YouTubers are seen as fun-loving entertainers with a passion for a specific niche in content. Many look up to these entertainers as inspirational role models. But what if I told you that even a fun-loving place like YouTube has a dark side? What if I told you that even the most family-friendly, light-hearted YouTubers potentially have a dark secret? Welcome to The Dark Side of YouTube. I'm your host, Autumn Ivy, and with this series, my team and I will be taking the deepest dives into the darkest and most disturbing corners of YouTube. These are the stories YouTube doesn't want you to know about. From the creators of The Dark Side of Gaming and The Dark Swamp Horror Stories, you won't want to miss a single minute of The Dark Side of YouTube. It's 11:03 a.m. on November 7th, 2007. Classes at Jaquela High School continue as normal. First period is ended, and the students are preparing to migrate to their next classes. None are aware that in 30 minutes, the deadliest mass shooting in Finnish history would take place, and the world would be horrified to find out how much was detailed on a little-known platform called YouTube. Every dark chapter has its prologue, its precursor, and its original. Today's subject is that original. A young, unstable man pushed to unimaginable and horrifying results. This is the story of YouTube's first serial killer, Erik Alvonen. Before we get to the incident at hand, we have to go back to the origins of its perpetrator. Not to glorify him, but to understand him. Pekka Erik Alvonen, named by his father for guitarists Pekka Järvinen and Eric Clapton, was born in Tuusula, Uusimaa, Finland, on the 4th of June, 1989. He wasn't known for any kind of delinquency growing up, had no criminal record, and by all accounts was a shy, reserved boy who isolated himself from others and characteristically blushed whenever he was embarrassed. It was these factors that led to something inevitable for many young people during their time in school. Bullying. Sensing his shy nature, it said a handful of individuals picked on him intensely for several years leading up to the events of 2007. In the year prior to the event that would ultimately put Eric's name in history for all the wrong reasons, his parents desperately tried to get him psychiatric help and admitted to a clinic for perceived depression and anxiety. Frustratingly for the Alvonen family, this was refused by doctors, and Eric was instead put on a prescription of SSRIs, known as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or depression medication for, you know, short. The hope was by utilizing medication, they could stop potential issues before they escalated, and Eric would not need any psychiatric intervention. Looking back, it's hard to condemn the doctors for taking a proactive approach that, in their mind, stopped a young 17-year-old from being committed to a clinic. But you have to feel something in the pit of your stomach, knowing that had they intervened, a bloodbath could have been prevented. Eric would prove to be unreliable in his own treatment, routinely not taking his medication and then dealing with the fallout of missing doses. Mood swings, paranoia, and agitation are all common effects that plagued Eric. These came to a head in the middle of a heated session with a youth worker while discussing the ongoing bullying. Eric's behavioral changes had been noted by other students and raised to the youth worker. They claimed he'd taken a more open approach to dealing with his tormentors and anyone else caught in the crossfire. Not by standing up for himself in an impassioned speech of how you can't break his spirit or that their words wouldn't hurt him. No. He'd instead tell them that they would die in a, quote, white revolution. Which is even stranger when you consider that Finland is 90% ethnically Finns, but I digress. It was from here that Eric's mental state would deteriorate further, with a teacher describing him as a militant radical in his rhetoric and looking at both far-left and far-right theories that agreed with his worldviews. But it was likely one place in particular that had the heaviest influence on his final decisions. YouTube. You know, it's strange to sit here now in 2022 and discuss YouTube as this small entity. More content is uploaded to it every day than there has been in the entire turn of the near century of television's existence. The platform itself is valued at $180 billion. And so full of personalities like yours truly, who are able to make a living either from or due to our talents being showcased on the platform. It's gone from a small online blog space for people preserving low-quality wedding tapes and singing videos to a behemoth of pundits, actors, streamers, and all manner of individuals looking to ply a trade to an ever-increasing and insatiable audience, whilst placating the unrelenting and, at times, obfuscation of its rules set by a moderating board that can take it all away with a snap of its fingers. Thanks to poor report functioning and brigading by unhappy individuals. Not that we're bitter. Not at all. But back in Eric's time, when the company was just a few months removed from being sold to Google for a then jaw-dropping $1.8 billion and beginning its growth into the giant it is today, the landscape was truly different. And this is where Eric would find a place to put the rage, disgust, and isolation he felt every single day. On March 15, 2007, the YouTube channel Natural Selector 89 was created. And yes, that was Eric Avenen's real YouTube username. The site just as adept at noticing terms with distressing context back then as it is now. In any case, at first, Eric's activity on the site in terms of providing content was informational, or from a perturbing angle, educational. Videos were made on topics which ranged, geographically at least, from the Tokyo sarin gas attack which occurred in 1995 to the Columbine shooting of 1999. Contextually, it could be derived as a point of admiration, or reference, as later events would prove. But it wouldn't be his only source of content. As well as the videos showcasing acts of domestic terrorism, Eric would also reveal some more personal opinions and videos that critiqued world religions, all the way from Christianity to Judaism, which, you know, at first could be considered a sign of the times. What you'd see today in regards to political commentators duking it out over hot-button topics on Twitch and YouTube livestreams was something done with less structure, even back then, as channels like The Amazing Atheist, better known now as TJ Kirk, and Thunderfoot would exist around the same time, providing the same substances in their work. While this bashing of organized religions in the name of a more powerful thought would always be something that had a certain amount of ego attached to it, neither Amazing Atheist or Thunderfoot never, ever dived as low as Eric did in their critique. Almost immediately, Eric harnessed a certain vitriolic dismissal of organized religion, quick to spit refuting venom, disproving any and all possibilities that the acts spoken about in Holy Scripture, again, something that when isolated, doesn't really harbor worrying tendencies. something that many of faceless social media accounts are quick to say themselves, but Eric's persistence, when coupled with how he believed others should view him, were more worrying. In his eyes, he was also a god that should be worshipped with the same graceful reverence people pay to other established religions and deities. As it is well established, Eric's attack on Jaquela School would be one of delayed response. But in the months before, Eric's caustic nature wouldn't go completely unnoticed on YouTube. In June of 2007, Natural Selector 89 would be showcased in some capacity on the Amazing Atheists YouTube channel, where TJ Kirk would take aim at people like Eric Alvinen and a woman named Tana Scheel, who had a YouTube channel named Robin McVeigh, a reference to the Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh. Both Eric and Tana were part of the same clique at the time. At this point, the pair were even romantically involved with each other. But this clique would be embroiled in an internet war that spanned several months, with Amazing Atheist flying the flag against their worshipping of domestic terrorists and school shooters, and the social Darwinism many had equipped at that time. While this may sound like an unrelated stream of information, it should be considered a large piece of the puzzle when it comes to deciphering Eric Alvinen's motives, both as a YouTuber and as the murderer he became. Despite this off-brand version of the internet crap shooting that would be perceived as legitimate beef between two factions, Eric, TJ, and Tana were all engaging in what was part and parcel of the community they were allies to, and possessed more personal connections. Namely, the presence of a woman and the grip she had on men, and their tendency to... Well, okay, remember the episode of South Park where Wendy looks more grown up to the boys, and then they literally start acting like cavemen? Yeah. Just think about it like that. In any case, Eric and Tana's relationship would be short-lived, with the pair breaking up at some point before September of 2007. With the latter quickly moving on and still being the target of Amazing Atheist videos, as well as her partners, most notably, Arian Warfare. Oh yeah, no, really, that's it, that's the name, Arian Warfare. Jesus Christ. Eric, on the other hand, would continue creating videos and participating in the community for a short while, until his Natural Selector 89 channel was suspended on October 19th, 2007. Why his channel was suspended is still unknown. Whether it was his username, the content he posted, or the wars he engaged in, it's all assumptions. Still, this wouldn't stop him, as on the same day he created another channel under the name Sturmgeist 89. The name Sturmgeist potentially being a reference to the primary antagonist of the video game Medal of Honor Frontline. The Nazi Baron Rudolf von Sturmgeist. I'm noticing a pattern. For a while, it would be host to the same type of content Eric was known for. Informational videos about acts of domestic terrorism and warfare, more videos about organized religion, and occasional interactions with the atheist community on YouTube. However, Eric would soon become more personal with his videos in the form of vlogs, as he had news. In the same month of October, he'd acquired a gun license and was starting to show off the weapon he had purchased. An SIG Mosquito semi-automatic pistol, chambered in .22 caliber. From here on out, his ownership of ballistic weapons would be the focal point of his video output, routinely showing video footage of him testing out the weapons in a forest outside of his house, shooting at fruit placed on top of tree stumps. This would be the stream of content produced for the weeks until November 7th of 2007, which involved an intense amount of uploading and communication on Eric's behalf in the lead-up to the shooting. Images, music, and a manifesto written by Eric were posted to RapidShare, a now-defunct file-sharing service used for illegal distribution of media and other material. Messages were sent to several people Eric was involved with on YouTube, including Tana and Amazing Atheist. Finally, a video was posted to YouTube titled Jaquela School Massacre, 11/7/2007, which showed pictures of the exterior of Jaquela High School before cutting to a picture of Eric aiming a gun at the camera, with a blood-red filter placed over him. Now, before we continue with the distressing content, I feel we should digress for a moment to talk briefly about why Eric decided to commit mass murder at his high school. After all, despite such a short-lived time on YouTube, Eric left plenty of clues. If not into why he committed the shooting, then at least into what kind of person he was, both before and after the massacre. For example, the manifesto he posted beforehand, which reads both as an About Me page on MySpace and as a small insight to the type of person who felt betrayed by the virtues that supposedly dismissed Eric as human. Who asks, how did natural selection turn into idiocratic selection? A question awkwardly referencing a word invented by the 2006 Mike Judge film, Idiocracy. Further on, Eric points fingers at both left-wing and right-wing tendencies, as well as society's failings to cater for humanity, citing 6% of the human population on Earth as intelligent or normal, while citing the other 94% of the human population as vegetables, as he put it alongside using the R word. References to Plato's work, as well as Friedrich Nietzsche and Ted Kaczynski's Unabomber Manifesto, are made. All the while, Eric seems to see himself to be above others due to his uncompromising ability to realize humanity's newfound position on this earth. The de-evolution showcased by people around him, Eric viewing it as arrogant and selfish. Their thoughts in line with many fascist accounts on the internet, as well as sentiments shared with others who committed similar crimes, the belief of survival of the fittest being paramount, and the disbelief that the meek shall inherit the earth. Maybe Eric was a victim of society that failed to benefit him, years of bullying and abuse leading to a point where everything snapped, where he found relevance, interest, and admiration for others in the same vein. People like Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold of Columbine, who were allegedly bullied to the same extent as Alvinen. And maybe there was a sliver of hope that common ground would be shared in the aftermath of Alvinen's shooting and Columbine, with Alvinen and Harris's first names being shared in balanced infamy. At the same time, maybe Eric's continuing growth at the age of 18 saw influences of evil from other sides, namely a breakup with a woman. Youthful relationships always hurting much more when you believe that so-and-so could be the one for you, and the only one for you. An immature knee-jerk reaction which saw himself try to impress a girl by engaging in acts that she promoted, adored, and defended with a group online. I mean, it's a long shot, but given how sloppily the manifesto reads, the hastily written insults of Eric Alvinen immortalized in a manifesto consisting of less than 4 fully written pages points to so many roads. One thing can be confidently assumed, however, and that was the following. Eric Alvinen was a coward, an awful, despicable young man whose fleeting right-wing beliefs of white revolution speaks less of indoctrination and more of edgelord battlegrounds made on a forum post. Yeah, you know what? Did society fail him? Yes, it did. And maybe blame can be accentuated towards multiple sources, but on that day, the main culprit was Eric. His debilitating protagonist syndrome and his sheer inability to grasp the complexities that humanity is and shall always be. The day was a tragedy for the world and the country of Finland, and it is a permanent stain that punctuates the failures of Eric Alvinen as a man, as a human, and as a murderer. The day that would forever be enshrined in Finnish history for the worst and bloodiest of reasons. The day of the shooting. At approximately 11:40 a.m. on November 7th, 2007, Eric would enter the Jokela High School via the ground floor main entrance after missing his first lesson. Armed with his SIG Mosquito and 500 rounds of ammunition, Eric opened fire on the first student he saw near the staircases, killing him instantly before moving to the bathrooms. After Eric had left, it wouldn't be long before other students came across the first victim. unfortunately. They thought he was simply unconscious due to a bump in the head. But the students did still call emergency services. At 11:43 a.m., an operator had alerted two ambulances to make their way to the school. During the call, gunshots were heard by both students and the operator, but neither party were able to accurately discern the threat at that time. It wasn't until Avanen entered the area near the lavatories where people finally saw the danger they were in. As two students were fatally shot outside of the toilets, the original caller who tried to get emergency services for the first student became panicked and attempted to explain that someone with a gun was patrolling the school and shooting anyone in close proximity. However, the student's sudden fear left the operator confused, unable to understand the situation or the danger that the caller was in. After the two students were shot outside of the toilets, the school nurse noticed the threat also and called the emergency services line as well. Another student was shot outside the toilets, and Eric noticed the school nurse also, beginning to take chase after her. At 11:46, the school nurse and another student were killed. And from here, emergency services was able to discern the nature of the call. It was a shooting, but the number of assailants was still to be determined. At 11:47, the deputy head teacher of Jekela High School was able to notify the head teacher, Helena Kaimi, that there was an active shooter situation. As quickly as she could, she went to the PA system with stern words. "To any students unaware, barricade yourself inside of the classrooms, for there's an extremely dangerous situation in the halls." Upon hearing this, Eric began to grow irate, firing his SIG Sawyer randomly into doors, windows, the floor, all of it, a total of 53 times. It was at this point where his intentions and the plan of action became murky, erroneous, lacking any and all sort of direction. In the hallways during his outburst, the mother of a student was spotted by Eric, and whether it was a brief moment of respite or a pang of regret seeping into the pathetic actions of Alvinen, decided to let her go free. Once she was out of sight, Eric went back to his tantrum. Noticing a barricaded classroom nearby, Eric tried to enter inside, but the students were able to keep the door closed, much to the ire of Alvinen. In response, Eric fired three shots into the door. One of the bullets had hit the foot of a student inside the classroom. After a short while, Eric gave up, making his way to the second floor, where two students were sitting on a bench in the corridors. Upon noticing them, the students attempted to escape from the gunfire, and while one was able to escape unharmed, the other was unfortunately shot and killed while attempting to run away. At this point, Eric went into his bag and pulled out bottles of two-stroke engine fuel and began to spray and pour it all over the floors and walls of the corridors. After they were emptied, Eric tried to enter the second floor's canteen where people were hiding. Thankfully, the sliding glass doors were locked, stopping Alvinen, who was demanding he be let in, and instead made him opt to take more aggressive measures. Eric fired into the glass, which ricocheted into some chairs. Luckily, the group hiding within the canteen was able to escape into the kitchen and hide within there, with no one injured inside. It was here when Eric attempted to light up the engine oil he'd poured all over the corridors, but whether it was due to the fuel drying up on the floors or his own ineptitude when trying to light a match, his attempts at arson were unsuccessful. At 11:54 a.m., Helena Kaimi, along with an education officer in tow, left the school with Kaimi on the phone, between the building and a pond that was nearby. Within a minute, the first response team would be waiting outside of the entrance of the school, so the education officer left to direct police vehicles and ambulances, while Kaimi continued to call people. It was around the same time that Eric had exited the school from the same place Kaimi and the officer did, cursing profusely at the failure of lighting the school up in flames. It wasn't long before Eric locked eyes with Kaimi, who was still on the phone. Bravely, Kaimi tried to talk the young man down to cease the shooting immediately and surrender his weapons. At 11:57 a.m., in response to Kami's pleading to cease fire, Alvinen shot the head teacher seven times in full view of a group of students, leaving her fatally wounded. After this, Eric re-entered the school from the first floor, deciding now to knock on any classroom door he saw. With motives unclear, he saw no luck until he was able to enter a comprehensive school classroom with a few students inside. Instead of continuing his murder spree, he instead barked orders at the confused students, telling them that a revolution was in effect and that they should destroy school property. Whether it was through uncertainty or paralyzed fear, the students would barely respond, leaving Alvinen to fire shots at a television set in a window before leaving without harming any of the students. Moving out and noticing something, the first responding officers were converging in the inner court of Jakela High School. Unperturbed, Alvinen attempted to fire through the window, but the .22 caliber bullet wasn't enough to penetrate the glass fully. He converged to the main entrance of the school to gain a better vantage in the hopes that shots would be able to repel the officers. At 12:03 p.m., Eric fired two shots at the officers who noticed him and negotiated for him to renege the attack. Failing to hit the officers was perhaps the last setback for Eric during this rampage. Realizing the overwhelming odds and the likely aftermath for him, he retreated back to the canteen, removed his bags and jacket, before making his way into the lavatory. Sitting on the toilet, Pekka Erik Alvinen placed the SIG Sawyer pistol to his head and fired once, ending the mass shooting at 12:04 p.m. Now, despite the lack of gunfire heard by students, teachers, first responding officers, and ambulance workers, police would not actually enter the high school property for another 30 minutes. At 12:35 p.m., 200 students and staff were able to be evacuated from the school, and before that, at 12:05 p.m., a patrol that had locked down the pool area beside the school had found the barely alive Helena Kaimi. Unfortunately, even with basic life support applied to her upon discovery, she passed away at the scene. Even then, officers were still awaiting full confirmation of the amount of perpetrators inside. Despite several reports from other students and the calls made to emergency operators, police couldn't confirm or deny the possibility of more than one shooter. While in the inner court, police believed three or four victims were located, but they found nothing. Officers from three different departments in different nearby provinces all converged on this location, and nothing. It would take them an hour from 12:35 p.m. for them to find six of the seven victims, not including Helena Kaimi. At 1:38 p.m. It would take them 20 more minutes before they found Eric Alvinen sitting near the lavatory, gun in his hand. Unresponsive, but alive. At 1:58, the final victim was found on the second floor. At first glance, they believed signs of life were still present in him, evacuating his body out of the school so he could receive first aid before a doctor discovered he was already dead. All that was left was to inspect the rest of the school, and at 2:30 p.m., police were finally able to confirm no additional gunmen beyond Alvinen. Another sweep was done afterwards, and at 3:17 p.m., all students were evacuated, the second inspection finishing 23 minutes later. During these inspections, Eric Alvinen was taken to Helsinki University Central Hospital, arriving at 2:45 p.m., where he'd lie unconscious in a bed until 10:15 p.m., succumbing to the headshot he'd performed on himself. A thought to consider. In the 7 hours and 30 minutes that he spent lying unresponsive and abandoned on a hospital bed, cops waiting outside in vain hopes he'd answer questions, with some possibility that motives could be unraveled. Instead, in an ugly turn of events, those motives, desires, all of it, left with him. Eric got to be in control of one last thing. But in those 7 hours, it's possible Eric had thought of every decision that led him there inside of that dying mind. Every single mistake. Every pound of pressure pushed on that trigger to play the god he so desperately and fervently begged to be. Every pair of eyes that had the life snatched out of them by someone who had no right. Every single regret that grew and coalesced into a final Rorschach test of synapses firing in his brain. Inside your mind, there is no ego to contest. There is no voice to quiver and bark. Just the unraveling of a soul. Whether it was for unrequited love of a woman, his community, or his beliefs. He died alone, surrounded by the war of emotions he pretended to discard in the name of race and a discarded society. Suspended in nothingness and legacy tainted by failure. Like it fucking should be. So, in the months following... there's one more ugly footnote I have to talk about, albeit a bit briefly. The world is full of messed up individuals. We live in a world where the kind of vitriolic hatred we used to hear about in furtive whispers or bad rumors, hidden away in secret corners of the internet, is now out in the wild for all to see. Gone are the days of anonymous accounts using slurs or peddling hatred ad nauseum. Now, they do it in broad daylight, unafraid by the consequences as they prattle on about whatever group of the day they take issues with. Their boldness is, in its own way, breeding more people just like Eric. And while there's 101 reasons why a person will wake up one day and go postal, as it were, there are unfortunately those who see these specific violent monsters and decide to take up the mantle for themselves, likely spurred on by a slew of their own mental illness, or fractured ideas of morality, difficult upbringings, so on and so forth. Enter Maddie Johanny Sari, a 22-year-old student attending Kawajoki School, who on the 23rd of September in 2008 would proceed to kill 11 people, including himself, in much of the same way that Eric Alvinen did. This occurred less than a year after Jokela and would go down as the worst mass shooting in Finland's history to this very day. Maddie's own YouTube channel, you may ask? It exists, but that's a story for another day. Before Eric's rampage, the last massacre had been in 1989. How do we know that Maddie was inspired by Eric? The same reason we'll have to confer with him in another episode. Simple, really. He posted about Eric, his passion for guns, and even his plans for the massacre. All on YouTube. While it's pertinent that I inform you of the aftermath, both positive and negative, involving the subjects that we choose, I really don't want to end on the notion of Eric Alvinen having any kind of legacy. So instead, I want to list off the names and ages of each of his victims, whom, like so many unfortunate casualties of mentally unstable men, are overlooked to the point of total obscurity. Semeli Saminurmi, male, 17. Mika Petiri Pulkinen, male, 17. Ariyuani Palsanin, male, 18. Hanna Katarina Larksonen Kinnunen, female, 25. School nurse Sirka Anneli Karaka, female, 43. Miko Tapani Mikus Hiltunen, male, 17. Vili Valtteri Vitsi Hinonen, male, 16. And lastly, the woman that in her final moments did everything she could to safeguard and protect her students, even trying to reason with the animal that was Eric Alvinen in the midst of his rampage. Principal Helena Kalmi, female, 61. No matter how much we delve into the dark minds of these individuals, I think it's always important to remember the people that they took away, to honor those people, and most importantly, the gap in their loved ones' lives that they leave behind after something like this for a tragedy. This has been another episode of The Dark Side of YouTube, and of course, I'm your host, Autumn Ivy. Don't forget, don't do anything I wouldn't do.